This is On The Mark. Pleased to be joined in studio by my guy Robert Ford, the play-by-play, the radio play-by-play voice of your Houston Astros, who are going to win the World Series. Robert, what do you think?
We'll see. Still a lot that can happen between now and then, but I mean, they're as good as anybody, so we'll see what happens.
So I'm looking at the Astros. I'm doing extensive research. I see you got 11 guys with more than 10 home runs, of course, led by, what do you call them, George Dinger Springer, 27 big ones?
Yeah, and ties a big league record. Only three other teams have done that, including the Astros in 2015.
So that's what I was going to say. I knew you would know the stats on that. That's got to be some form of record. So what is it again?
Yeah, so the 2016 Twins, 2015 Astros, and the 04 Detroit Tigers are the only other three teams that have had at least 11 guys in double figures in home runs.
And that we're in the middle of August right now.
Yeah.
This video is going to last forever. But it's just the middle of August. So,
yeah.
You maybe even add on to that. Is there a possibility of adding on?
Probably one other guy, one of the Astros' top prospects, Derek Fisher, who has, I believe, four right now. So
okay.
He has a chance if he goes on a run, and he's hit for power in the past.
Right. So did you see the dominance, at least up to this point? I know that you guys have lost right now 9 of the last 13, but did you see the dominance coming?
I don't know that anybody ever sees a season like the Astros have had where, you know, they're 13 games up in the division right now, which is actually the lowest they've been in several months. So I don't know that you ever predict that a team is going to dominate their division the way the Astros have so far this year. But, I mean, I think everybody knew the Astros were a pretty good team, made the playoffs in 2015, just missed out on the playoffs last year, made some moves in the offseason that would make them a little better. Their young players getting a little bit more mature. So I think there was a sense that this was a team that would compete for a division title, but I don't know that anybody expected a double-digit division lead at this point in the year.
I want to get back to the Astros in a second, but I want to talk about you, Robert Ford, because I've known you for a while now. We both worked in Kansas City.
Yep.
You were, at the time, the pre- and post-game host for the Royals. I was kind of your assistant.
I prefer the term lackey, actually.
Right, yes. Right. I was the reporter who would go into the clubhouse, get the sound, come up and do a segment with you on the post-game show. It was a ton of fun. I love your story because, you know, one day before you were there and you did a bunch of minor league baseball, but you started your career out as a fan at, I want to say, Yankee Stadium, calling a home run next to somebody who's eating a hot dog there. That's how you made your demo tape. Is that accurate?
My first demo tape, which I took to the baseball winter meetings in 2001, was play-by-play I did from the stands into a tape recorder at Yankee Stadium and Shea Stadium. Did both Yankees and Mets games. My first call on the demo was my call of Mike Piazza's home run against the Braves in the first game in New York after 9/11. Wound up being a go-ahead home run, big deal, and the Mets won that game. But that's how I got my first play-by-play job in the minor leagues, was with that demo tape.
And who was that job with?
The Yakima Bears for the 2002 season, short season Northwest League, 76 games in 80 days, and they lost 22 in a row that year. I believe it's three minor league teams since 1990 to have a 22-game losing streak, and I was a part of it.
That's amazing. What did Yakima pay you for your 80-game season? Do you remember?
If I remember correctly, my take home every 2 weeks was like $550.
That's not bad. You were a rich man.
Well, I had left the job where I had made $40,000 that previous year. So, yeah, it was a bit of a decrease.
Right. So you were, you know, one of those, you went to Syracuse, you were one of those guys, but you weren't like Johnny Syracuse. What's that radio station? WAER?
WAER, the famous station. I'm probably one of the few, if not the only, like play-by-play alum from Syracuse who never spent a day at WAER.
I mean, that more than anything else, doing play-by-play in the big leagues, the fact that you went to Syracuse and didn't do WAER, that could be your greatest accomplishment. Did you want to do WAER and they wouldn't let you?
Well, I think what it came down to for me was, you know, I went to Syracuse and I wanted to be a broadcast journalism major, and so that's what I majored in. I thought initially I wanted to be like a sports anchor, sports reporter. And then about latter part of sophomore year, I realized what I really wanted to do was play-by-play. Well, at WAER, I mean, one of the good things about Syracuse is it's so competitive. You have so many people who go there wanting to be in sports broadcasting, wanting to do play-by-play. And so it's extremely competitive to get on the air at WAER. So I knew that at that point it was probably too late for me to get on the air doing play-by-play at WAER, because you basically need to step in first day of your freshman year into WAER and say, I want to do play-by-play. There's a whole track. There's a progression. You work your way up. And I was going to be well behind my classmates at that point. So that's why I decided to do things a little differently.
So, and there are a lot of people that even as a sophomore in college, knowing that you sort of delayed yourself and your track was quote unquote blocked, even though it's not really, they would give up right there. Where was the internal confidence, I can do this, belief, I'm going to give it a go anyway? Where's that coming from for a Robert Ford?
I didn't know any better. And so I just kept trying to figure out a way to get play-by-play experience, a way to get on the air. I knew I wanted to do baseball. I wanted to do other sports too, but baseball was number one. I'd sit in the stands at the Carrier Dome doing Syracuse basketball and football games, and I think it was one of those things where I just kept working at it and just tried to find opportunities. Did high school football for WZZZ. I think it was 1300 on your AM dial in Fulton, New York, outside of Syracuse. And my salary for doing, I think I did three football games for them, was $0.
All right.
And
ZZZ stands for zero.
Apparently, that's what it stood for at that time. But, you know, it was all just a chance to get on the air. And one of the great things about Syracuse is that not just the school, but also the market is such that there are lots of opportunities to do things in radio, do things in television, get on the air, do stuff off camera, behind the scenes. So I was still able to find, I interned at radio stations. I did some ringside reporting for the minor league hockey team on their radio broadcast. I still found ways to get on the air. I mean, wasn't doing exactly what I wanted to do, but I just kept working at it and working at it until I finally got to a point where I was able to figure out a way to get teams to hire me to call games.
So, okay, that's a tremendous, like, I think you learned some in that. You built up some, like, strength to the business because you need it because you know it's going to be.
You do, but for me, it was just, I was just like, I want to be on the air and I'm just going to figure it out, and I just was either too dumb or too tunnel vision to think about doing anything else or think about, hey, this is really hard and what you're trying to do is really difficult. None of that ever crossed my mind. And
right.
I mean, and you know, being young, I was willing to move anywhere, do anything. I mean, I moved to Yakima, Washington, for crying out loud. And I'd never been, I think I'd been to Arizona once, but beyond that, I think the furthest west I had been was Arkansas.
Right.
But that didn't matter to me. It was just like, this is where the opportunity is going to be, so I'm going to go where the opportunity is.
Was that a drive to Yakima? Was that a flight? Was that a train?
Bought my first car about a month or two before I moved there and drove cross-country to Yakima, Washington.
You drove cross-country to Yakima, Washington?
Yes, by myself.
Did you stop? Do you remember?
As a matter of fact,
I don't know why this interests me, but it does.
I had a friend at the time who was going to grad school at Purdue.
Okay.
And I went to visit her, and we went up to Chicago. It was the first time I'd ever been to Chicago. Spent an entire day, went up to Wrigley Field. The Cubs weren't playing at the time.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was the first time I ever went to Chicago. But that was really the only stop that I had.
Okay, and then from Yakima, what happens next?
So I was out there for 8 months. I stayed there after baseball season, worked for the CBA team, Continental Basketball Association, for those kids that don't remember that. That's the league that preceded the D-League. That
Isaiah Thomas killed it, for those who do remember.
I'll let you fill that part in. But I worked there after had restarted the Yakima Sun Kings of the CBA. I was an account executive for them after the season ended. It was miserable for a variety of reasons. Wasn't a good situation. I wasn't cut out for sales. And so I just applied for jobs everywhere, wound up getting a job with a radio station group in Kalamazoo, Michigan, initially just to call baseball for the independent league team that they had there in the Frontier League. And that morphed into a full-time job at the radio station doing small college and high school basketball and football, doing news anchoring and reporting. And so I wound up being out in Kalamazoo for 2 years. And then from there, got hired by the Binghamton Mets, AA affiliate of the New York Mets.
And you grew up, grew up a Mets fan.
I grew up a Mets fan.
So now you're in the Mets organization, so to speak. I mean, really, you are. That's pretty cool.
Right. I worked for their AA team and got a job with them. Did that for 4 years. And while I was out there, also did basketball and high school football and various other things while I was out there. And then from there, went to Kansas City, which is how we met. My program director in Kalamazoo got a job in Kansas City at that station, and that's how I wound up there.
I forget his name.
Ryan McGuire.
Oh, yeah, right, okay.
You didn't forget his name.
No, I didn't.
And, and then, 4 years in Kansas City, and then Astros had an opening on their radio broadcast team, and my fifth year with the Astros.
And I was actually, myself, I was working in Houston at the time, and I remember you coming down to try out to interview.
To interview,
yeah. In the dead of winter. That season, if I may tell the story, I'm sitting there in a September Astros game. This is when they were terrible trying to rebuild. The only good player they had was Jose Altuve. So being the Mark Carman that I am, I was I joined a guy a row in front of me, and we did the Altuve chant, and it literally rang out through the entire stadium, Minute Maid Park at the time. Is it still called Minute Maid?
Still called Minute Maid Park.
Okay. So, and then being the Mark Carman that I am, I called the post-game show, and I said that that was the worst atmosphere I've ever seen in a baseball game. And the guy, he called me out on it, and he's like, well, where were you? Were you cheering? And I said, I was the guy yelling Altuve. He said to me, that was you? Because you could literally hear it.
I mean, yeah.
There was nobody there.
Well, and that's how it was. I mean, my first year, 2013, the Astros lost 111 games, worst season in club history. They lost their last 15 games in a row that year.
Right.
Just a dreadful season. But, I mean, it was all part of the plan. They were rebuilding. But it was their third straight 100-loss season. And that's difficult for anybody.
Yeah. Now, some people say that that's the whole thing because, like, the White Sox are doing it now. The Cubs did it and it paid off from the Royals.
Yeah.
Did it, but a little bit different where Kansas City was just bad for that long. But there is a whole movement now. You got to get bad to get good. Do you think that's a problem for the game when it's a big market team that's, you know, choosing to lose and in the process they actually make a ton of dough?
I think it's one of those things. It's just the way the game is set up. I mean, what you don't want to be is in the middle.
Right.
You don't want to be a team that wins 85 games every year, maybe makes the playoffs, probably misses it. And just kind of middle of the road. You need to be good or you need to be bad. I mean, that's just the way. I don't know whether it's good or bad for the game. I think one thing that's helped, you think about the White Sox right now, like you mentioned,
right,
who are doing a rebuild. I think it's a lot easier for the White Sox to sell that to their fans because they see what the Cubs have done. They see what the Astros have done. They see what the Royals have done. So I think that's the good thing about it. I think when you think about 5-10 years ago when teams were starting to do these sort of teardowns, it was a lot harder to sell to fan bases because there was no light at the end of the tunnel, or so it seemed. There was
right.
no model franchise. But now you can look at several teams that have done it and have been successful, and you can say, all right, I see where this is going. I can be a little bit more tolerant of it. So I think that
right.
makes things a little easier for a team like the White Sox.
Right. I mean, as a Cub fan watching, it's like, okay, at least there's a plan now.
Right.
And there's
right.
Theo Epstein. And you know, the White Sox also got a head start on their rebuild because they had Chris Sale to trade and they had Quintana to trade and they
right.
had a great trade.
I think
trade.
It's 9 players they traded for 19 guys since
yeah.
December. I mean,
right.
that's how you do things.
Right. Okay, so let's talk about what the playoffs look like for the Astros. I think the big concern has got to be the starting pitching and getting guys healthy. And I mean, how do you see that playing out in the best case scenario right
well,
now?
Well, I think it's not just starting pitching. I think the bullpen to a certain extent as well.
Yeah.
I think Dallas Keuchel getting healthy was big. Colin McHugh getting healthy was big. Keuchel, unfortunately, has not been very good so far since coming off the DL, but you have to figure with his track record that he's going to figure it out. And there's some signs to make you think that he will. Colin McHugh had a bad outing his last time out against the White Sox, but has been very good since coming off the disabled list. So that's encouraging. They need to get Lance McCullers back, who's on the DL for a second time with a back injury, and hopefully he'll be back in another 2 or 3 weeks or so. And then with the bullpen, Will Harris, who was an all-star last year, he's on the DL right now, hopefully coming back in the next couple of weeks. That's something that needs to improve. And I think one thing that hurts them in the bullpen is they don't really have a left-handed reliever who has a track record of getting the good left-handed hitters out. Tony Sipp had been very good for a couple of years for the Astros, but hasn't been good this year, wasn't good last year, currently on the DL. They did trade for Francisco Liriano, who had been starting for the Blue Jays to be that lefty reliever. Maybe he'll be the guy, but the jury's still out on that. And so I think that's something that's an area of concern. And then you look at what happened at the trade deadline. Liriano was the only addition that the Astros made. And, I mean, it's easy to say, well, they should have done more. We don't really know what those phone calls were like. We don't really
right.
know what they were doing in that room. But bottom line is they didn't upgrade at the trade deadline. So that means that you're relying even more on Dallas Keuchel getting it back together, Kyle McHugh being healthy, Lance McCullers being healthy.
Who was the Astro that spoke out saying, I got to be honest, I am disappointed we didn't make another
move? Was Keuchel who had those comments that kind of went viral.
Yeah.
Of course you're going to be disappointed as a player, but I think players also recognize that They have a job to do, and the front office has a job to do, and they just have to worry about doing their job. And at this point, I think sometimes for the players, it's a relief when the trade deadline's over. You don't have to talk about it anymore.
Right.
So now you just focus on playing baseball. And, I mean, look, this Astros team is best record in the American League. So the guys they have are still pretty good. They've been nice to add, but it's not like they have a bad team.
Right. Let's talk about you a little bit more here. So how many African-American radio play-by-play guys or TV are there in baseball right now?
There's one other in baseball. It's Dave Sims, who does mostly TV and some radio for the Seattle Mariners.
What does that mean to you, to be in that position?
I think, I never looked at myself as being like a trailblazer. I mean, I did this because I love it, and I love baseball, and I've always been a big baseball fan, and I thought play-by-play was something that I could be good at and make a career out of. I mean, I think you'd like to see the broadcast, just like you like to see the players on the field, just like you like to see management. You like to see it reflect the fan base, and baseball's fan base is very diverse,
right.
And diverse in terms of gender, diverse in terms of ethnicity. And I think I'd like to see the broadcast reflect that more.
Right.
And they don't right now. And there are a variety of reasons for that. Some of them aren't necessarily anybody's fault, but it's just the way things are right now. So, you know, when people ask me about, would you like to see more black broadcasters? I'd like to see more everything. I'd like to see more Latino broadcasters. I mean, you know, you'd like to see more female broadcasters, because I think you want the sport to reflect the diversity of its fan base. And also, too, I think it's important for fans to think that there's a place for them in this game and that they belong in baseball. You know, when they see a female broadcaster or hear Susan Waltman, who's done Yankee games for years, or maybe if they, I mean, they don't get to see me on radio, but, you know, maybe they feel like, all right, well, there's a black broadcaster. If, you know, you're a young black fan or someone just getting into baseball, maybe you feel like, all right, there's a place for me in this game because I see people who look like me, who sound like me, doing these things that I'm interested in and following the sport that I'm interested in.
And one of my favorite things about you is, like, a lot of people, times in the broadcast world, because it's so hard to make any money, people tend to come from privilege. They have some money cushion behind them so they can sit there and make no money forever, and hopefully it works out. You really weren't that guy. For instance, I don't know your whole fantasy, but
no,
you were a New York kid.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't poor, but I mean, my family certainly wasn't wealthy.
Right.
I mean, we did okay, but. But yeah, I definitely didn't come from what you would call privilege.
Like the standard Syracuse kid, if we were going to name it, I mean, that's a pretty wealthy guy. It's
oh,
a
sure.
private school,
I wouldn't have been able to go there without tons of financial aid. I mean,
right.
That's a fact. Still paying student loans, as a matter of fact. But I think it's one of those things where, for me, and I think this what happens, I mean, you mentioned, you know, being from privilege and being able to not make a lot of money and go to these small towns. I think also, too, for a lot of people of color, you know, you're less likely to go to Yakima, Washington.
Right.
Like, you're going to be thinking, well, is there going to be anybody out there who looks like me? And, you know, that sort of thing. For me, I just didn't care. It just didn't matter to me. I wanted to do baseball. I had blinders on. You know, if I had to go to Yakima, if I had to go to the moon, it didn't matter. But for a lot of people, that matters.
Well, and the other side of it is, like, I'm just imagining you driving cross country. And just the reality is, black guy at night driving cross country, it's not, you don't really want to be in that position. You don't.
Sure. And I mean, it's not something that everybody's going to do.
Yeah.
But again, for me, that sort of stuff didn't matter. I mean, I certainly noticed it. I mean, and I'm not kidding you when I tell you that I can count on two hands when I was in Yakima, the number of black people I met who were from Yakima, Washington.
Right.
Maybe even just one hand, but definitely not more than two.
Right.
But again, I still met some great people out there, had a great time. Everybody was very welcoming. It was a great place to start my career. Kalamazoo, you know, similar, although Kalamazoo was a little bit more diverse.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's still something that you're gonna realize. But it just never bothered me. I never thought of myself as, you know, trying to blaze a trail. Is just like, hey, this is what I want to do.
Well, and you're the voice of the Astros right now. I mean, you and Milo Hamilton are not exactly totally similar. I hope you have the same Hall of Fame career as Milo did. But that's a different sound. It's a different look for Houston, too. I mean, I think it's an interesting place for you to be.
Yeah, well, I think what helped me is, well, first of all, Milo was very good to me when I got the job and basically replaced him before he passed away. But I think what helped me, too, was the fact that I didn't grow up in Houston. I didn't grow, I mean, I knew who Milo Hamilton was. I'd heard him a few times, but I didn't grow up listening to him.
Right.
So for me, you know, like, I remember when I got the Astros job, you know, I'm getting all these questions about, hey, what's it like to succeed Milo Hamilton? It was something I never really thought about. I mean,
right.
you know, you realize it, but I was just like, you know, I mean, I hadn't grown up listening to him, so I didn't feel like there was this huge shadow, even though there probably was, but I think it was good for me that it was something that I didn't think about because it was I didn't grow up listening to the Astros and rooting for the Astros.
Right. Let's do one final baseball question.
Yeah.
You sit there every night, 3.5 hour, 4 hour games, and I've sat there with you, and I'm always wanting to let's go, and you just, you're totally fine. You'll sit there all night. But being there every night, and if you were to tell baseball, here's my one recommendation on how to speed the game up to make it a little more time friendly to those who have to go to work the next day, what would you say?
I think the biggest thing is to reduce or eliminate as much as possible the stuff between pitches. That's really where it comes down to. Hitters walking around the home plate dirt area, the catcher who makes a million mound visits.
Right.
I think those are the things that really slow the game down, and you don't want to completely get rid of all that stuff because that's part of what makes baseball the sport that it is, and it's never going to be, you know, fast pace with the ball moving every 2 seconds. It's never going to be that. But, you know, I wouldn't mind seeing a pitch clock. But I think definitely you want to reduce a lot of that time between pitches from the pitchers, the catchers, and the hitters. And I think if baseball does that, you'll start to see it's not even so much time of game, it's more pace of game.
Right.
Because
I agree.
We've all seen games that last 4 hours, but you know, they're 13 to 12 and they're exciting games and there's back and forth. And so you almost don't even realize that the game's taken as long as it is because it's just so action packed. But you know, it's a little different when it's a 4 hour game and it's, you know, 5 to 2 and it's like, well, this shouldn't take nearly as long as it does. And you know, the pace wasn't very quick. So I think if they get rid of a lot of that dead time between pitches, then the pace of game will improve.
Robert Ford, pleasure to talk to you. You're gonna be in the World Series this year. I can feel it.
We'll see.
Cubbies, Astros. Thank you for watching On the Mark. This is Robert Ford, the radio play-by-play voice of the Houston Astros. Hope you enjoyed the conversation.